This is NHPR News. It's now 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. President Obama's been talking for a while now about making higher education more affordable. But his administration's recent move to create a rating system of the nation's colleges and universities is not going over well with the heads of these institutions. In the New York Times, one college official called the effort wrong-headed, another oversimplified, still another clueless. The ratings idea is certainly on the minds of New Hampshire higher education leaders, including our guest today, UNH President Mark Huddleston. In fact, he participated in a White House forum earlier this year where he talked about efforts to make a UNH education more affordable and accessible. Still, while he agrees lowering cost is a critical goal, it shouldn't be the only goal. In fact, Huddleston made waves in a speech in February when he criticized a push in higher education to, as he put it, throw everything online so customers can enjoy everyday Walmart prices. Today in The Exchange, UNH President Mark Huddleston joins us, and let's hear from you. How can UNH tackle high costs and student debt without sacrificing quality? Are there steps that other institutions are taking that UNH might adopt? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on Facebook, NHPR Exchange, all one word, is our Facebook page. And President Huddleston, nice to see you. Welcome back.
Good morning, Laura. Good to see you, too.
Well, how do you feel about this ranking system that the Obama administration says, like it or not, is coming?
What were those words that my colleague,
clueless?
Clueless. Yeah, I would endorse that sentiment. I have real problems with that proposal.
Why is that?
Well, first, I believe strongly in transparency and giving people as much information as they possibly can get about what we offer as well as what any industry offers. I think that's hugely important for consumers. But I think what the White House has proposed is a one-size-fits-all operation that simply doesn't work for the 4,000-plus colleges and universities in America. Each one is very different, one from another. And any attempt to try to force everyone into the same kind of scheme is just bound to lead to all kinds of mischief, I think.
What's the goal here, though? I mean, clearly they wouldn't do this if they didn't think they were satisfying some sort of a need.
Well, I'd like to believe that. And I think there certainly are some good motives on the part of some people behind this. There's a genuine interest in controlling college costs that we all share. At the same time, I think there is a political element to this, too. No one's shocked to hear that politicians in Washington have political motives as well. And there's a kind of populist appeal to accusing colleges of being non-transparent and accusing universities of somehow not providing all of the information that parents and students would like. And that's what disappoints me, because I think that that interest, that motive has been trumping the genuine interest in trying to come up with a more transparent arrangement.
So throwing some red meat to middle-class families.
Exactly, which is unfortunate.
What is a fair way, President Huddleston, to rank colleges and universities, to give students and parents a little more help in sorting this out, you know, whether it's debt levels or graduation rates or whatever?
Well, let's start with the word ranking. I would suggest first that's an error to use that term in this context. The worst ranking scheme, arguably in America, is the U.S. News ranking system, which is really I think terrible. It leads to all kinds of mischievous consequences. And any effort to try to say that one college is number 334 and another one is number 650, there's a false precision, and there's also a pitting one against another that just doesn't make any sense. And it leads parents and students to believe somehow that there's some universal metric that allows people to say, my child ought to go here rather than here, when in fact one of the real strengths of American higher education is its diversity and the fact that your son or daughter may find college X really appropriate, whereas my son or daughter may find college Y really appropriate. And it's not that one is better than another. It's that one is simply better aligned in terms of its curriculum or its size or what it has to offer with what your child needs or what my child needs. You know, before I came to UNH, I was at Ohio Wesleyan University, wonderful little four-year liberal arts college in Ohio that would have very little appeal for many of the kids who come to UNH, but the same is true in reverse, that a lot of the kids we got at Ohio Wesleyan simply wouldn't find UNH attractive. And you can multiply that example out by thousands. And what the Obama scheme does, it seems to me, is put a single straitjacket on all of us and pretend that there is a universal ranking that can be applied. That's just not true. And just if I can continue, sorry, I can talk for a long time on this. I will try not to. But let me just say one more thing. Whenever rankings are done or whenever any kind of measurement scheme is imposed, there are good consequences that can come from that, but there are also perverse consequences that can come from that. So, for instance, if we use as a criterion, which I believe the Obama administration plans to do, the idea of something as simple as graduation rate. We all believe the graduation rate should be improved.
But that seems like something I would want to know as a parent.
It's sensible on the surface. But if we use that as a criterion for, quote-unquote, ranking schools or for deciding whether they're good or bad, or if we want to withhold federal money from schools that don't do well on graduation
rates.
Which is the threat that the White House is making. Think about what that would do if you play that out. Schools right now that serve relatively underprivileged, not very college-ready kids and are willing to go out on a limb and take kids who really aren't quite ready for a prime time or they're even struggling in high school, but they want to have a shot at college, they're going to be punished. Whereas Harvard and Yale are going to be just fine because they get kids who are super ready for college and their graduation rates are always going to be off the charts good. Whereas a small regional comprehensive public university in Texas that serves first generation kids for whom English may not even be their first language, they're not going to have a very good graduation rate. But should they be punished for serving that clientele? I don't think so.
Well, when you were at the White House earlier this year, did this kind of stuff come up, President Huddleston?
Oh, you bet. I mean, that was not the main purpose of this conference. The main purpose of the conference was to talk about what we as college and university officials can do to provide more access and affordability for kids. That's a hugely important concern of mine and of everybody in higher ed. But before we could even get to that, the room kind of erupted in concerns about this rating system that the Obama administration is talking about using because it is such a worry for all of us.
Really? So you guys and gals didn't hold back when it came to telling the administration how
you felt? No, we didn't. And for their part, the Obama administration officials were not ready to fold their cards either. They were continuing to defend this scheme. Whether it will survive congressional scrutiny, I don't know. There's a lot of opposition that's forming around it. And the criticism has not been without a constructive element, by the way. The major national association that UNH is a part of as a land-grant flagship institution is called the APLU, the Association of Public and Land-Grant Universities. APLU has come up with what I think is a very constructive alternative to what the Obama administration is proposing. We'll see if APLU or one of the other associations is able to get a substitute, in effect, in place.
All right. Well, let the dialogue begin.
Okay.
Again, the phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Exchange listeners, it's your chance to talk with Mark Huddleston. He's the president of UNH. We're taking your questions and comments, whether it's about the cost of college, student debt, or other efforts underway at UNH that you want to talk about. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange. All one word. And President Huddleston, let's talk a little bit more about the costs. You've talked about this in your State of the University speech and in all sorts of other forums. Why do you think college inflation is outpacing regular inflation and certainly most people's wages?
Yeah, that's the most vexing question probably in higher ed. Well, first, let me say I think we've begun to see a leveling off of those forces. And certainly at UNH, we have taken that as job one, trying to make sure that higher ed inflation doesn't exceed the base cost of inflation in the United States. We're now in the second year of a tuition freeze at UNH, and I very much hope we can continue that tuition freeze for two more years after this, and that will be entirely dependent on what the legislature does. If they can restore the funding that we used to have, I'm confident that we can continue the freeze in tuition. And if we can, in fact, work out that kind of a partnership with the state, I think I'm correct in saying it'll be the first time in the history of American public higher education anywhere that there will be 4 years of a freeze, such that a student entering as a freshman would be paying the same amount that as a senior that he paid as a freshman. So that would be wonderful if we can work that kind of an arrangement.
I want to ask you about the state aid a little bit more. From what I understand, state aid makes up about 5-7% of the total university budget.
Yeah, with the restoration, it's back closer to probably to 8%, but still in the single digits, unfortunately.
So why is it that, since it's such a small slice, and walk me through this, it's such a small slice of your budget anyway, why is it that a restoration of this small slice allows you to all of a sudden freeze tuition? It seems like it's just a small drop in a big pond.
Well, it is, but we appreciate every dollar we can get, and you can do the math, and those dollars actually work out exactly to the amount that it would take to control those marginal costs where we have to, you know, we've got healthcare costs that go up every year, and we've got energy costs that go up every year, and we have to pay more for food in the dining halls and so on. And those extra dollars from the state would be just enough to allow us to hold our tuition increases down to zero or near zero.
And do you think the freeze is why UNH is expecting a larger than expected class this fall? Because you'd think with the demographics in New Hampshire, you'd get smaller amounts of college students.
Well, that's exactly right. That's one of the greatest pieces of news I've seen in a long time as far as UNH is concerned. Just so your listeners understand, we will be bringing in the largest single freshman class in the history of the university this fall, 3,400 students. And we can talk about that more in a second, but it's tremendous news for us to celebrate.
More conversation with UNH President Mark Huddleston in just a moment, and we'll take your calls. The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be back in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. The Exchange is coming to the North Country. Join Laura Canoy and a panel of experts as they discuss the state of the Main Street economies north of the Notches. You can attend this special event at the Colonial Theater in Bethlehem July 10th. Reserve your tickets at nhpr.org, made possible with support from the Neil and Louise Tillotson Fund. Mostly sunny today, slight chance of showers and thunderstorms this afternoon, especially in the North Country. Highs upper 70s to lower 80s, cooler along the coast, a high around 70. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from Edgewater Farm, River Road, Plainfield, with over 2,000 varieties of annuals, perennials, herbs, and vegetables, and a staff committed to help with all of your gardening needs, edgewaterfarm.com. From LRG Healthcare, presenting an information session on Makoplasty robotic joint replacements for hips and knees on June 4th at Lakes Region General Hospital, lrgh.org. And Doucet Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine, Doucet Survey.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Canoy. Today in The Exchange, UNH President Mark Huddleston is here to talk about events at his institution and trends in higher education nationwide, including the intense focus these days on college costs and student debt and new models to deliver higher ed more cheaply. Here's Huddleston's take on this in his State of the University speech back in February.
Small wonder, then, that we're advised just to call it a day. Throw everything online, substitute call centers for face-to-face interactions, and award competency-based credits for college-level analogs of GED degrees, all so that our customers can enjoy everyday Walmart prices.
Again, that's UNH President Mark Huddleston speaking back in February. Let's hear from you this hour. Your questions and comments for President Huddleston are welcome. 1-800- 892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And President Huddleston, before we go to our listeners, I do have to ask you about that. That really grabbed my attention back in February. I heard it on the radio and I thought, did he really say that? And then I heard it again and I said, yeah, he really did say that. What are you trying to say there? Throw everything online and offer Walmart prices?
Well, what I'm trying to say is that I believe deeply, and I think all of my colleagues on the faculty at the university believe deeply in the transformative power in individual human lives of sitting face-to-face with another human being in the classroom as a mentor and as a guide and as an advisor and learning that way. I think that there's a role for online education, for sure, and in fact UNH is doing its own forays into online education, many of which are very successful. But it's not a substitute for the kind of learning that takes place between real people in real time, again, face-to-face. And one of my favorite stories, and this is absolutely true, one of my friends on the faculty at the university was telling about a young woman who was his advisee, his student, who came to him in his office hours and said, "Professor, I'm going to drop this major." And he said, "Why are you going to do that? You've really been good in my class, and it's been fun working with you. I can't do math." And he talked to her a little while longer, and she was really pretty committed to leaving. He said finally to her, "Do you want the rest of your life to be defined by what you can't do?" And she finally said, "No, of course not."
Yeah, that's profound, isn't it?
It is profound. But how does that kind of an interaction unfold online? How do you, when you're interacting with someone via a video or through just the web, not just convey information to them, but actually affect their lives as a human being by challenging their assumptions or by thinking about what's best for that whole person? You can't do that, but that is what we do every day. That's what our faculty does every day with these kids. It's more than just a conveyor belt of information or more than just a credentialing that takes place because of some set of skills that has been acquired over the course of a lifetime. There's a place for that, but it's not a substitute for a brick-and-mortar university where genuine transformation in lives can take place because of that interaction.
Are you in danger, President Huddleston, of old think with that? I mean, I hear you, I hear what you're saying, but maybe young people feel differently. Maybe that's okay. Maybe, you know, you're missing the boat here.
Oh, could be. But I like to think that what we're doing at UNH is what a lot of other universities are doing, providing a spectrum of opportunities for students so that they can decide what works best for them. There's a phrase that I've been using at UNH called University of Choice, where I like to think, and it's a deliberate double entendre, obviously, but where we become a university that people choose to come to. We're a university of choice in that sense, but we're also a university of choice in the sense that once you're at UNH, you can choose your own path. If you want to get done in 3 years, you can do that because we've got rich summer offerings and rich offerings during winter session and online and so forth. If you want to go for 5 years and pick a master's degree, you can do that too. Or if you want to do a minor or a set of foci in different areas, you can put together a program that works for you. I think that's where the future of higher ed is going, is in providing students with much more choice, not only of subject matter, but also of modality and of pedagogical style.
Modality, including online.
Absolutely.
But not exclusively online. Not,
in my view, no.
All right. Again, the number for you to join us with your thoughts, questions for President Huddleston, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook, NHPR Exchange, all one word. Again, the number, 1-800-892-6477. And President Huddleston, let's go to Kathleen first, waiting in Peterborough. Hi, Kathleen. You're on the exchange. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, good morning, Laura. Thank you.
Sure.
Mark, I just a little bit concerned about the guidance of courses. My daughter went to UNH, graduated 07, and when she went into UNH, she was not allowed to take science courses because she wasn't a science major. And she went in halfway through her junior year, and she was told, "Oh, well, you need to take another year and a half after your 4 years because you don't have your prerequisites done."
Yikes.
And I spoke with one of the faculty, not that she had, but after she graduated, and that person told me, "Oh, well, if you're not a declared science major, there's no room in the classes for you to take the courses." And she did really well. I wanted her to go right in the science classes as a freshman while everything was fresh in her head.
Right. So a little more guidance up front sounds like would have been helpful, Kathleen. Now, obviously, President Huddleston, you can't comment on this particular situation,
right,
but
right.
The idea that, you know, it is confusing what to take, what you need to graduate and so forth.
Sure. And I think we've got generally very good academic advising in place at the university. That's not to say there won't be cases that where there are slips. And I'm sorry that happened to Kathleen's daughter. I know, though, that we have science courses designed especially for non-science majors. In fact, because of our general ed requirements, every student has to take some science courses. It is true that not all science courses are open to all students, just as not all business courses are open to all students. And there are some that are reserved for majors. If you're going to be an electrical engineer, there are different courses that you start in than if you're an English major and you need to fulfill your science requirement. But I can say with confidence that there are some science courses available to everybody. And because of our STEM push now, we're really encouraging not only more students to major in those subjects, but for everyone to get some familiarity with this so-called STEM discipline, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics.
I want to ask you about that STEM push. Kathleen, thank you, by the way, for the call. There's efforts, multiple efforts underway at UNH to promote STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, as it's called. There's UNH Manchester's STEM Discovery Lab. There's STEM Connect and Project SMART on the Durham campus. How does a humanities guy like yourself, President Huddleston, feel about today's heavy, heavy emphasis on STEM?
I think it's critical. I think it's critical as a university president as an American citizen. We cannot continue to have a competitive economy in this globalized world unless we have the skills that you need to drive productivity and innovation. And that, in turn, is really a straight line function of the number of students we've got majoring in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And we know from careful comparative studies of the U.S. versus China and in India and other countries, we are way, way, way behind what we need to be producing in terms of engineers and scientists. And we've stepped up to the plate in the university system and with partners in the community college system here in New Hampshire to make a commitment to double the number of STEM graduates in New Hampshire by 2025, because even here in little old New Hampshire, we've got a huge deficit of software engineers and of other kinds of people in the technology fields. And we are absolutely committed to trying to address that. And we had a big uptick. I mean, we those great numbers that we talked about, 3,400 incoming students, almost a third of those are STEM majors. That's wonderful. We need to do more, and we will do more, but we're off to a great start, I think.
I wonder what you think about the pushback that I've heard lately on this, President Huddleston, that we're going overboard with this. You know, let's not forget the other areas of our lives, arts, English. Jennifer Lee, an English major at UNH, you know, won an Oscar for the movie Frozen. Marcy Carsey, who just gave UNH $20 million to set up a public policy institute. I don't think she was a STEM major. So are we going overboard here? We do that often in our society. We say, we need this, yeah. And we all go in this direction. Then we say, oh, no, we need this, and we go in this direction.
Yeah, there kind of is a pendulum effect that you have to think about and worry about. But no, I don't think we are going overboard. And for me, it's not either or. We need to do more in the STEM areas, and we will do that. But we should never, ever neglect arts and humanities and social sciences and all the other things that we're committed to. Those are also really essential. But I think what you're seeing now is a slight swing of the pendulum back toward the middle where it should be with respect to STEM. We really let ourselves as a country, as a state, let things get too far out of whack. And we're now about the business, I think, of trying to renormalize where we should be.
Really? Now, why do you suppose that is, that we, quote unquote, let ourselves get too far out of whack?
Well, you know, I think the last time we had a big emphasis on STEM disciplines was back when I was a kid and thinking about going. I wasn't even in high school at the time, but during the Sputnik.
Right, 1956, the Sputnik
exactly.
Moment.
And I think for a while, for 10 or 15 years, there was a big national effort to rebuild American strengths in those areas. But then, to use your metaphor, the pendulum began to swing and we began to lose some focus, or maybe we got a little bit complacent. And now we're finally recognizing that and trying to recalibrate, as I said.
Again, our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Twitter or Facebook. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. To Bedford, Patrick's on the air. Hi, Patrick. You're on with President Huddleston. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you? Thank you for taking my call. My question goes back to what you guys were talking about just a little while ago. With respect to the experience that you want students to have. You were talking about how you don't want to be moving courses online. You don't want to be, offering them at Walmart prices. I think that was the reference that came up over and over. The question I had was, if you want to have classes that are affordable and you want to offer students an experience that is affordable but also positive and enjoyable and enriching and fulfilling in the way that it was for that student who was thinking about dropping math. Do you think there is a risk in thinking that way? Do you think there's a risk that you might overlook professors? That professors might find themselves in a position where they're maybe trying to advance this agenda but not being paid adequately or not being cared for.
So is your question, Patrick, are professors well paid enough at UNH, or I'm not really sure what your question is?
My question is, I think we're thinking a lot about students. Giving them an experience that they enjoy.
Sure.
And I think if we are looking to do that, we have to think about what the professors are there for. Are they there to sell something, or are they there to teach?
Okay, I think I get you, Patrick. Thank you very much for calling in. Go ahead, President Huddleston.
Yeah. Let me be real clear first. I said that we ought not to put everything online, at least at an institution like UNH, and we ought not to be forget about quality as we try to achieve affordability. That was my reference to everyday Walmart prices. But we are trying to put some courses online, and we are certainly making huge efforts to maintain affordability at the university. But to Patrick's question, as I understand it, my point, and I think the point of a lot of folks who think about this, is not that we ought to diminish the role of faculty by any means. Rather, we ought to shift the role of faculty so that they have more time to do what they do best as highly accomplished professionals who care deeply about students. That's why everyone is in the academy, because they care about students. And that's to free them up from just lecturing at kids, which is what I grew up doing when I was a professor, because that's really all you could do. But instead, by using technology, using the internet, free people up to do other more useful added value things in the classroom,
like meeting one on one, or working with small teams,
small groups. Absolutely, and I think that's really where the real power of technology lies.
Well, Patrick, thanks for calling, and I'm glad he brought up professors, because a criticism of higher education in general, not just at UNH, is the increasing role of adjuncts or lecturers. Some say this is too large a role. We're taking advantage of people. We're not giving them benefits. We're not paying them well, and that the students lose out because they don't have that sort of settled, full-time, tenured professor that they can go visit in the office. What's your thought, President Huddleston, on the role of adjuncts and whether it's gotten too big?
Well, first, let me make a distinction between what's happening nationally and what's happening at UNH. I think it's absolutely true nationally that we've got a real issue with respect to adjuncts and non-tenure-track faculty, and that's largely a function of cost pressures. I mean, the same people who beat us up on the one hand for charging too much then beat us up in the next sentence for using non-tenure-track faculty. But having said that, at UNH, we don't do that. Overwhelmingly, our students are taught by full-time tenure track or full-time lecturers. We use very, very few adjuncts, and we use them only when it makes sense. So that there's an unexpected demand for Chinese some semester, and so you find someone in the area who is available to teach an extra section of Chinese. We make as an institution that cares deeply about undergraduate education and is committed to the residential model, we make every effort to put full-time well-credentialed tenure track or ongoing lecturers in front of our students.
I've read that the percentage on most campuses today is about 30%. It used to be about 25%. Do you know roughly what it is, President Huddleston?
For adjuncts, yeah. It's much less than that. I don't know the number, but it's much less than that. We do have lecturers, folks who we hire on long-term contracts to teach. They do not have research responsibilities, but they're benefited. They're well paid, it's a great career. It's just not exactly the same career as a tenure track faculty member.
Well, one of your lecturers, Tom Zhang, I think his name was, made global news recently.
That's right. Yeah. By solving a math problem that no one thought was solvable.
All right. Is he full time faculty now, or is he content being a lecturer?
Actually, I think we've offered Tom a job. I'm not sure where we are in that process.
Yeah.
I want to keep him. That's
for sure.
Well,
you would think so. Another question about the staffing. And again, Patrick, thanks for the call. A common complaint is that there's too many administrators on college campuses today, non-teaching professionals. An article by the New England Center for Investigative Reporting finds that the number of non-academic employees at U.S. colleges and universities has more than doubled in 25 years, outpacing the number of faculty or students. Again, give us a sense of what is happening at UNH. This is a common complaint, President Huddleston, that the number of administrators has gone up, tuition's gone up, but faculty and students have stayed the same.
Yeah. Again, I'd make a distinction between what's happening nationally and what we're doing at UNH. It is true that there has been a growth in non-teaching staff at universities around the country. Some of that, a lot of that's driven actually by federal regulatory pressure. So we're all required to have a huge number of people that would do things like prepare the scorecards that the Obama administration is preparing to impose on all of us. But that aside, I think it's also it's fair to say that some institutions have been less than vigilant in controlling the number of non-instructional staff that they have. We, on the other hand, have been very, very vigilant. The number that I use typically when I talk about this is 70%. And the 70% number refers to what it costs UNH to produce a credit of instruction as opposed to what it costs our peers to produce a credit hour of instruction. And the big difference, what explains that delta between what others do and what we do, is largely the leanness of our administrative staff. We don't have bevies of associate provosts, assistants to, and mini deans and so forth running all over the place doing things. We run a very, very lean operation at UNH with people doing multiple jobs that at other institutions would be done by multiple people.
I wonder if that small level of state support has helped keep you lean and mean. Maybe it's a blessing in disguise, President Huddleston.
It has. And I've often described UNH as the canary in the coal mine. We've been first where others are bound to follow.
All right. We will take a lot more of your calls, emails, comments on Facebook after a short break. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange. All one word. You can join us there, and we'll be back in just a moment.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, debate over proposed new EPA limits for carbon dioxide emissions. Then for this month's environmental outlook, meeting the world's demand for seafood. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
This morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from the law firm of Raff, Young & Pignatelli, serving the business and nonprofit community, National Impact, uniquely New Hampshire, on the web at rafflaw.com. And from Franklin Pierce University, introducing their new one-year accelerated MBA that will start in the New Manchester Center this August. Information online at franklinpierce.edu. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our annual Summer Book Show. Today in The Exchange, UNH President Mark Huddleston joins us to talk about college affordability, debt, new projects afoot at UNH. Join us now with your thoughts. Call in 1-800 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook, NHPR Exchange, all one word, or find us on Twitter to continue the conversation. President Huddleston, before we go back to our listeners, we've talked a lot about what happens in college. We've talked a lot about affordability and debt and college costs and why they're so high. Let's talk a little bit about another complaint that you often hear from university officials, that the K-12 system isn't delivering the type of student who's up to university-level work. What are you seeing at UNH?
Well, what I'm seeing at UNH is a commitment not to complain about that problem, but to try to solve the problem.
But is it a problem?
Well, sure, I think it is. Not that our students aren't prepared, but as I look at the landscape of K-12, I think I'm concerned, a lot of people are concerned that students aren't being exposed to the full suite of challenging courses that they need to be prepared to come, not just to UNH, but to any college or university. But the way to address that is to roll up your sleeves and work with our partners in K-12, all of whom are well-meaning and hardworking professionals too, and try to address it. It's a pipeline issue, and if we want to have the product come out of the pipeline at the end that we live at, we need to be helpful all along that pipeline.
So what are you doing toward that end? I've heard that you're reaching out K-12. What does UNH President Mark Huddleston do? I mean, do you walk into a kindergarten classroom and start reading Dr. Seuss?
I actually have done that. That's been a lot of fun. I don't know how much good that does, but I've enjoyed it. Well, first let me say a couple of things we've done institutionally, and then I can talk about some things that I've tried to do myself. But institutionally, for instance, use the Manchester campus as an example. We've got a discovery program going on at UNH Manchester that brings young kids as early as elementary school into UNH Manchester to work in a STEM discovery lab, to be exposed to all the fun things. And science really is fun. Fun things you can do in and around science challenges. We've got in summer at UNH Durham, probably 12,000 kids that pass through our campus every summer for various kinds of activities. Some of them are
high school kids.
Well, not just high school kids, even middle school kids and younger, doing everything from music camps to lacrosse camps to engineering boot camps and so forth. And that's partly self-interested on our part. We want to make sure that we get the great word about UNH out to kids very early, but it's also part of our commitment to outreach to K-12. Personally, one of the biggest takeaways for me from that White House conference that you mentioned was the crisis that we face as a nation, not just in access and affordability, but confidence in the sense that a young man or woman knows that he or she could go to college and succeed. One of the most telling quotes I heard at that conference was that most kids drop out of college in the eighth grade. Think about that for a minute. Most kids drop out of college in the eighth grade, meaning they never really get there. They make a decision about themselves and their capabilities far too early. So what I've been doing personally is trying to go and visit high schools and middle schools around the state and talk to kids and say, you can go to college. You should go to college. You ought to think about it now and you ought to plan for it. And I can do that because I'm a first-generation college kid myself, and I can speak from the heart and say that my parents weren't able to go and my grandparents weren't able to go. So I didn't grow up in an environment where it was the natural thing to do, and I had guidance in my family.
So you're there to deliver that message.
Absolutely.
Even if they're not getting it anywhere else.
Absolutely.
And so what do you say to the kid who says, yeah, that sounds great, but I can't, there's no way I can't afford it?
Well, we talk about that, and while it is true that UNH is an expensive place to go because of the low level of state support, almost everybody can, in fact, find a way to go through a package of loans and grants and work study and work in the summer. Almost everybody can figure out a way to do it. And we're willing to work with kids to help them figure out a way to do it. Or if it's not UNH, you can go to the community colleges for a couple of years and transfer to UNH. There are a lot of different avenues that are available.
Let's take some more calls and emails. President Huddleston, again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Back to the phones. And Mark's calling from Durham. Hi, Mark. Go ahead. You're on the exchange.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead.
just wanted to talk about underrepresented groups in STEM, because there is such a national campaign to propel STEM in the United States. But there's also a disproportionate recognition of underrepresented groups who could really help increase the diversity and abundance of Americans in STEM. Primarily, I'm talking about LGBTQ, giving contrast to people of color and women in science who are also underrepresented and have their own suite of problems. They have recognition through the funding agencies, such as the National Science Foundation, and they give them a lot of money so that they can continue to succeed in STEM fields. In contrast, LGBTQ have none of that support, and they're not even recognized as an underrepresented group. So I think one of the problems, and something that UNH is actually doing a really good job at, is fostering a good environment for LGBTQ, such as through the creation of OSTEM out in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, and an awesome facility. But either way, it's kind of problematic because once you graduate and you're LGBTQ identified and you're out, which is pretty unlikely because...
You feel uncomfortable in that STEM field, Mark? Is that what you're saying?
As an individual, no, but there is an environment that's driven by the heteronormative culture. And when you don't have funding opportunities, for example, in STEM, there's now this campaign to increase the relevance of your research, such as like helping extension efforts, things like that. But if you're LGBTQ and you're dedicated to extension for propelling other LGBTQ and your efforts aren't recognized, you're not really going to get that funding opportunity. And
okay.
If you say that you're LGBTQ explicitly, you're also not going to get it.
Okay, so Mark, thank you for calling in. And this is a slice of the whole STEM discussion that we haven't focused on yet, President Huddleston. There are certainly groups that feel less welcome in STEM education.
Yeah, that is true. And we've tried to tackle that problem, as your caller has indicated. I think we've got a long way to go. But we've got a huge grant from NSF to address women in science, for instance. We have
NSF is National Science Foundation.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, National Science Foundation. We have a variety of efforts to try to connect underrepresented minorities with the STEM disciplines, including a summer program we run called STEM Connect, where we bring in underrepresented kids for a couple of weeks in the summer before they actually matriculate as freshmen to get them up to speed on some of the STEM skills that they need. So, yeah, I think the caller is spot on that we need to continue those kind of focused efforts to make sure that everybody is brought into the STEM tent.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. And I did want to ask you about another tough topic, President Huddleston, and that's the issue of sexual assault on campuses, getting a lot of attention, not so much at UNH, but around the country. What do you think, given that this problem has not gone away, that we're still talking about it, that it's still obviously there, even though people have been looking at this for a long, long time, is it time for a rethink on how we approach this on college campuses?
Well, I think actually that we are part of that rethink. UNH is one of three institutions that was identified by the White House as being ahead of the curve on this. And we have a nationally recognized sexual assault research effort underway at UNH that informs not only what we do, but is actually now beginning to inform what a lot of other institutions do. And in fact, as you probably know, the U.S. military has been struggling with this issue as well. And our faculty have been working with the military on
really?
This.
Really? You're advising the U.S. military on how to go about this?
We really are kind of cutting edge in terms of our research capability on this issue and on being able to turn that research into meaningful programs to try to address this problem.
So what is it? And I know, again, it's a little unfair because you're the president. You're up here at this level and you're not working on this directly day to day. But what is it that you guys are doing differently than the way it's done most everywhere else?
Well, you're right. I'm not an expert in this, but I'll give you one example anyway that I think has garnered a lot of attention rightly. And that's a program we have had called Bringing in the Bystander. And what that refers to is the fact that in many sexual assault situations, in many other places, well-meaning people stand by and allow a young woman to be put into a compromised situation when a small intervention, not a confrontation, but just a small intervention that can defuse the situation or move a threatened individual from that situation can make an enormous difference. And so what you're doing is not so much educating, in this case, the potential victims or the young women themselves who might be victimized, but you're educating everyone for their role in and their responsibility to step up and prevent what could be a horrific situation from occurring.
All right. I wanted to ask you about that because I know it's been an issue on college campuses around the country. It's gotten a lot of attention lately. Here's an email from Sandra in Manchester who says, for those of us who struggle to send our children to UNH, it would be a great help if the current student athletics fee were made non-mandatory. It currently costs all full-time students $1,000 a year, whether or not they participate in athletics or attend any games. Sandra says this is an unnecessary burden for many students and their parents. This has come up before President Huddleston, sort of a little bit more a la carte options people feel would be helpful. If they're never going to use the gym, if they're never going to attend a hockey game or a football game, why should they have to chip in?
How about the library? If they never use the library, should they not have to pay for that? Or if they never are going to walk down that sidewalk, should they have to pay that part of the maintenance fee? Or if they don't tend to come to class during February, should they not be responsible helping to pay for the plowing of our parking lots? I know we live in kind of an a la carte state where everything is fee-based, but the fact is you can't run an institution that way, I don't think. And we are a university, and everything is interdependent. And unfortunately, we really just can't parse out who uses what with that degree of fineness and still manage to maintain the tremendous quality that we've got institution-wide. And I don't mean to be flippant. I appreciate the costs, and I'm not one at all, as you know, to minimize the concerns about the burdens of higher ed. But I do object to efforts to try to tease apart what is, in fact, a very integrated whole and have people pay for that which they think they use, not even recognize often the fact that they use more than they think they do.
Now, if I live off campus, do I still have to pay for those, you know, on-campus facilities, the athletics and so forth? I probably do.
Sure,
I'm guessing.
You do. Yeah. And let's take athletics for a second. If you don't go to a game, you may think that you don't benefit at all from athletics. But in fact, our athletics program can be seen, I see it, as part of our marketing and branding effort. And you as a UNH student, even if you don't go to a football game, you're benefiting from the fact that we've got a wonderful world-class football athletic program in general that gets our name out there and brings in more students and actually keeps the costs down for you otherwise because we have such a robust program.
Well, and that leads to another question. The concern about the $25 million football facility built with private funds, UNH has pointed out. Connect the dots for us here, though, President Huddleston, between, you know, building this facility, student costs. I know you've heard people say, you know, how can you do this when students are paying so much money for tuition?
Sure. Well, let's start with the fact that that facility was built in the 1930s as a WPA project.
Really?
Yes, and has had very little done to it since then. It's a renovation of an existing facility that is used not just for football, but it's used for a whole variety of athletic activities, women's and men's. And by the way, the Special Olympics were there this week. So it's a statewide facility in many respects. We are responsible. We're stewards of the state's facilities at the university, and we're responsible for keeping them up. That's a crumbling facility right now, and I've got a responsibility as one of the stewards of our facilities to make sure that it's brought up to code, as it were. $25 million is a lot of money, no question about it. But let's norm this for a minute. Our football team, which is arguably one of the best in the country, is housed in, as I said, this 80-year-old facility. Notre Dame, which hasn't, I don't know, last time they had a streak of winning seasons, is building a $400 million facility. So this is little old New Hampshire doing an appropriate New Hampshire-scaled project that will benefit the whole state.
Have you gotten some flack for this, though? You sound a little annoyed there. Yeah.
Well, a little bit. But I think it's something we really have to do, and I'm proud of it, and I don't have any problem defending it. I think it's a perfectly defensible thing.
Couple emails I'd love to share with you, President Huddleston. This is from Robin. He says, Dr. Huddleston's skepticism about college scoring criteria from the government is well justified. If you think students and parents pay too much attention to U.S. News and World Report rankings, just wait till Uncle Sam forces official scores.
Bingo.
Robin says, moreover, once there's official scoring system, it will be mercilessly gamed by the institutions. So Robin's in your corner there.
Yeah, I think he's absolutely right. When he says game, that's exactly what I meant by talking about the perverse consequences of any measurement scheme. People game them.
Here's another email that came in from Matthew. It's a little bit long, Matthew. I won't read the whole thing, but I'll try. He says, as someone pursuing a PhD in literature at UNH, I want to make sure that the discussion of STEM and its importance doesn't leave out the best news I've gotten at UNH, which is the building housing the English and philosophy departments will finally receive a major renovation. UNH's English department is renowned and influential. Nice to be at a place where the understandable and valuable attention to STEM has not completely overshadowed the value of humanities and arts in the world. I love this. I want to share this with you. As a kid, Matthew says, growing up in rural New Hampshire who loved books, I first paid attention to UNH because I heard that famous writers like Charles Simic and famous writing teachers like Donald Murray were there. I'm glad the university is not losing sight of one of its gems. Matthew, that's great. Thank you so much for the email.
Oh, thank you indeed, Matthew. And it's a great thing to point out that while we are, for instance, renovating the athletic facility at $25 million, we're renovating Ham Smith, one of our most iconic buildings, home of English and philosophy, for $40 million. I think we've got our priorities right.
All right. And speaking of renovations, new things that are coming, this year we saw the official marriage of UNH and Franklin Pierce Law Center. Mm-hmm. We got UNH Law. You got the new business school opening up. When are we going to see the School of Public Policy, another non-STEM related but important issue, the public policy, Marcy Carsey School?
Yeah, you mentioned Marcy's gift, which was wonderful and transformative, and we're working hard at it now. It's already starting, and the programs are in place. It's been a great year. It's just been a wonderful year at UNH. Fundraising is off the charts. So it's a lot to celebrate.
Is it a physical facility, President Huddleston, the Marcy Carsey School, or is it sort of a combination of existing buildings and classrooms?
It's a combination of existing buildings. If somebody wants to give me another building, I'll be happy to take it. But that was not part of Marcy's vision.
All right. Well, good to talk to you, and we hope to see you again in about half a year, a year.
Thank you, Laura. It's good to be here.
That's UNH President Mark Huddleston. UNH, again, includes the main campus in Durham, also UNH Manchester, and now UNH Law in Concord. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is James Pouliot. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our annual Summer Book Show. As the warm weather finally arrives, we'll find out what's new this season in books suited for days at the beach, in the mountains, or in your own backyard. There's a new memoir from baseball legend Mariano Rivera, also a hot-selling series from New Hampshire children's author Paul Durham, and a new novel for adults from J.K. Rowling. Email us at nhpr.org and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show, next at 10 o'clock on New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from you, our listeners, and from the Melanson Company of Keenan Bow, with comprehensive roofing solutions for 80 years, adding solar to turn roofs into energy-producing assets, melanson.com. And Cardigan Mountain School, an independent boarding and day school for grades 6 through 9 in Canaan, New Hampshire, near Dartmouth, educating boys the Cardigan way. Cardigan.org.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord 89.1.
WEVS Nashua 88.3.
WEVH Hanover 91.3.
WEVN Keene 90.7.
WEVC Gorham 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. Yesterday, the EPA proposed new rules on carbon emissions. The EPA is requiring a 30% reduction in carbon emissions by 2030 compared to 2005 levels. Older coal-fired power plants are a significant source